Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Hello, and welcome to episode 124 of Active Quest. I am joined by Mr. Chris Penwell. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I've passed out multiple times this weekend because of how busy it's been, and I needed the rest, and so I think all that time and energy put into everything has finally caught up to me. So
I was grateful that this E3 was still not in person, because I don't think I would have had the energy to attempt to do a, you know, I'm still not ready for that yet. Not ready for that yet after the pandemic and all that.
I'd love to go next year, though.
Yeah, oh, me too. I almost get a panic attack in a gas station right now, so I don't think I could do E3 yet.
And you get much better interviews if you do them in person, so.
Yeah, well, it's because you're so charming. It's, you know, same with me. We could show up in some nice suits, slick our hair back.
I don't think you want to wear a suit in E3, though. It'd be a bit hot and steamy.
We'll just dress up as Master Chief, then we look really professional. We got a good gamer suit on. Mm-hmm. So this week's going to be a little bit of a brisk show, because, you know, E3 is where a lot of the news gets put and things get kind of quiet afterwards. I think journalists, we're not the only ones that are tired after E3. I think everybody's tired, so they're like, let's put some news out a few weeks. We got a couple of quick stories. We got two bigger news stories. Really, even our news stories would probably be quick news stories on another week, but it's just a little slower this week. The news side, I haven't been playing too many games. I've mostly been busy with E3 stuff and like post E3 articles. Chris, have you been in the same boat, kind of?
No, I've been playing a lot of Ninja Gaiden Sigma. From the Master Collection, and I have things to say about that. You can check out my reviews soon, or it might be up already on Game Skinny. Nice. It has issues, but I enjoyed the game itself. But the remaster, not as good. But also, you can. I'll be talking about Guilty Gear Strive, which I received a review code on, and then Biomutant, which I received a review code for as well. So
curious to hear your thoughts on Biomutant, especially. That game has it's been all over the place. Like, yeah, it's one of those games where like people like it, but they've got concessions. There's not a lot of universal praise or, you know, negatives on it. It's kind of in the middle.
We have to be honest, though. We just haven't really covered it extensively, just because it kind of got lost in the shuffle. A lot of games released, and it's one of those things where I was able to get like 2 or 3 hours out of it, and then I had to move on to other stuff. So I appreciate the review code, but I think by the time we kind of received it, it was a bit too late anyway.
Well, and then also we didn't want to get the news buried in the E3 stuff too. It's like I've got a review that I finished 2 weeks ago for Retroware for Mighty Goose, and the publisher reached out to me, and I just told them, you know, it's done. We just didn't want to publish it in the middle of E3, you know, and have no one see it. It's tricky finding the right time sometimes for coverage.
It's tough to cover indie games, especially because a lot of games released around this time, and I have one game to review for Retroware that I've been putting aside, so hopefully I can do that this week.
You and me, but I've got 3 reviews that I'm working on right now, and like one of them's got a June 30th embargo, so I got a little bit of time on that one. But the other two I need to get done like kind of ASAP.
I'll have a few previews coming up as well soon. which I'm excited to talk about more with. But yeah, you can find Active Quest on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Podcast Addict, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are probably there. You can follow us on Twitter at ActiveQuestShow. You can email us at activequestpodcast@gmail.com. Please just don't send the spam, because we've had a bit of that recently, you know. Making how are you gonna make your big digger your dick bigger?
We yeah, are good. We don't need help with that.
We don't.
Good
we're,
already.
We're good.
At Active Quest.
We're fine.
Active Quest is an official big dick energy podcast. Just kidding.
Jesus.
Yeah, no, we don't want the spam. We do want you to spam us review codes, though. Go ahead and
yeah, we'd like to cover your games. You know, it's been a bit busy lately, but you know, we'll get around to them eventually. And
yeah, there's only three of us, but we'll get to them as quick as we can.
Exactly. Yeah, and when those big games release, oh my god, you know, it's gonna be it's tough, but we'll find a way around it. But yeah, please rate us on Apple Podcasts. That would really help us grow. And I've seen a few come up. You know, we've got about 20 now, so I'm thankful for that. Cool. Also,
we have 5 stars. Like, thank you for everyone that has reviewed us. Like, we've got a good rating. We appreciate that. Helps us a lot with discoverability. So.
Exactly. And we've seen an uptick of listens this week, so I appreciate it. Please keep sharing the show. We used to be at a much higher number, but due to COVID, we're at a lower point. So any help you can give us would be great. We'd be grateful. But Josh, are you ready to get into the
quick news? Let's go ahead and jump into some quick news. So the first one up we've got is an Alan Wake remaster may have been found in the Epic Games Store. This is from John Carson over at Game Informer. I'm not going to get to the whole article. Go ahead and check out the full article on Game Informer that John wrote up here, but essentially, a Redditor found some information that points out to an Alan Wake remaster, you know, what looks like an Alan Wake remaster. And then we've also kind of had other rumblings that happened too, like, you know, Remedy made it a point to mention that, you know, they got the rights back, you know, a little earlier last year and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's just looking more and more likely, like, not only will we get more Alan Wake stuff, which, of course, Control had DLC in the universe, but also a remaster might happen, which I think that game still looks pretty good, but I won't say no to a, you know, better-looking version of it. Chris, what do you think about this?
I think it's smart for them because, you know, Alan Wake could definitely fit in today's kind of landscape. I think more people would be interested in checking it out. But also, with this remaster, maybe they'll have a special episode that links Alan Wake to Control.
Kind of like the Borderlands DLC that we saw that connected 2 and 3 a little bit. Like, we're seeing that happen more and more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be cool. And it also just kind of puts him back in the conversation, because outside of that Control DLC, the last Alan Wake thing that we got was 2011. So,
Another big story from this leak is that Final Fantasy VII Remake is coming to PC as well through the Epic Games Store. And it makes sense because Square Enix has a big ties with Epic Games, with its development. You know, Unreal Engine really helped Kingdom Hearts 3 come to fruition, and the whole Kingdom Hearts series is available on Epic Games Store, so
this is
kind of the next big
thing. Looking forward to that being on Xbox, too. I know it's a timed exclusive, as that comes to Xbox, I'm buying that again on Xbox.
Mm-hmm. I'm
happy to double dip on that.
I could see, like, the first kind of iteration of Final Fantasy VII Remake coming to Xbox, and then Integrate is PS5 exclusive. I could see that happening.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, everything else is already on, you know, Xbox. And, like, all the old games are in Game Pass, or a lot of them are.
And one quick shout-out as well. Apparently, A Plague Tale Innocence might be a PlayStation Plus game for next month.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, that was
I really like the Rats of Us. It's a good game. Isn't that a fun title? I saw that on Reddit one time. I was like, that's so fun.
And we didn't mention this on the show, but the Plague Tale Requiem was announced at E3 Xbox's showcase. We kind of forgot that came up. So, yeah, I thought that trailer was pretty good.
I definitely want to see that. I want that to be a series. You know,
I think it will be.
A lot of really good stuff there.
Yeah.
So next up in quick news, this is from Zach Zweezen on Kotaku. It's so many people are playing Battlefield 4 again that EA is increasing server capacity, which is good. It'll help people find matches faster, but it's really neat too because this game came out in 2013, and we're not going to go over the whole article. You know, go to Kotaku and give them a click. But basically, one of the factors that we think has happened is not only the Battlefield 2042 reveal, but also this was free on Twitch during Summer Game Fest.
Yeah.
So a lot of free players, a lot of new people are able to check it out for, you know, no additional money. And then people are just excited again, too, because of the new Battlefield game. But yeah, Battlefield 4 was good. And it's also good seeing a publisher look and see, oh, people are playing that. Let's make it easier for them to play it. Because they really could have just ignored it, been like, whatever. You know, the new one's coming out. But that was nice that they, you know, increased servers and stuff.
What's your favorite Battlefield game? It's for me, I think it's 3 or Bad Company
3's
2.
3's my favorite still. Yeah. I put just a ridiculous amount of hours into 3. It was so much fun.
Operation
Metro, I bought all the DLC. I played that all the time when it was new. It's just, I think for me, that's still my high point for Battlefield. It looks like 2042 is, I mean, I know we don't know much yet, but from what we've been shown, it looks like it might be kind of a high point for the series again.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt like the last couple of Battlefields, it was like, oh, we got to make this. Let's make this. It didn't feel like there was as much energy into Battlefield as there used to be from EA, you know, and stuff. So I'm glad to see Battlefield be like an event competing with Call of Duty again. You know, for a long time, it was like, yeah, Battlefield's okay, but it's not as good as, you know, this year's Call of Duty or whatever, at least for me.
And I think Criterion's helping out with that, and they're a very talented studio, so.
And then in another kind of related to the Battlefield thing, but like the other side of it, this is over at Game Informer from Marcus Stewart. Rockstar is shutting down GTA Online on PS3 and Xbox 360 in December. It's sad to see, but on the other hand, this did launch in 2013. So they kept that alive for 8 years. And it's, of course, still available on Xbox One and PS4. They kept it around until the two generations later. So it's a pretty long time. But just a kind of a big thing that I thought we should mention briefly. And then we've got one more quick news story before we jump into our main news. This is also from Marcus Stewart over at Game Informer. The Medium crosses over to PlayStation 5 in September. So this is pretty exciting. Bloober released this on Xbox Series X and S earlier in the year, and it's coming to PlayStation 5 now, which is cool because horror games don't always sell super well, even if they come out and everything. So it's good that more people will have a chance to play it. This comes out on September 3rd, PS5, and of course we have to mention, as we are almost but not quite contractually obligated to mention Xbox Game Pass, this game is in the service if you have an Xbox Series X or S. Or Chris, do you have any interest in checking out The Medium on PlayStation 5, or is it not your cup of tea?
Over the past few years, I've been way more interested in horror games. Like, ever since I got into Resident Evil 7, and then 2 Remake, and then Resident Evil Village recently. So I've been into horror games. And I'm excited to see where it goes. I just heard a rumor today from Jeff Grubb that they're reviving Dead Space in some fashion.
EA was talking about how they're bringing back an older series. Do I hope it's Dead Space?
Yeah.
Those are backward compatible on Xbox, and like they're cleaned up really well, you know, just from like, you know, natural enhancements and whatnot. Uh-huh. But I really would like to see either Mass Effect style remake, remaster, or even just a reboot. You know, just make Dead Space again. Run with the concept. Take some stuff from it if you want, but you know, do it again.
Like I would just like a remaster, to be honest with you.
Yeah, remaster would be fine. But man, if we could get, we won't be able to get Dead Space 4 because of how 3 ended, pretty much. But you know, reboot or, can you imagine like an RE2 2019 style like remake? That would be,
yeah.
They could do some really good stuff with lighting that just wasn't possible.
Who would work on it then? Bloober Team?
I mean,
they would kill it. Like, I would say, like, Bloober Team is probably a studio to look out for because when I played the cyber kind of like game. I can't remember what it's called now.
Observer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That took some really interesting twists and turns that I didn't expect, and it was very trippy. I think the graphics
Blair Witch game
was stunning,
pretty good too. Like Blair Witch, their Blair Witch game wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like game of the year or anything, but like I played a few hours of it, and what it didn't do right or well or could have done better, it I think was made up for just like how interesting it was. Like, you know, there's some really good concepts there that I'd like to see, you know, kind of further explored.
I think they're the next studio to get acquired if they haven't been already, like THQ Nordic or Microsoft.
They seem like a studio like Obsidian, where they would do better if they had financial stability, didn't have to, you know, worry, because they're really creative. But yeah, so that's good to see, and I'm excited to see that you've gotten, you know, even more into horror games. I like all genres, but I just think horror just works so well for interactive media.
Yeah.
You know, like, I love horror films and TV shows too, but like, you just can't beat a good horror game. Like, you just can't. They're so good. And it's really special when you have to pause the game, because you're like, nope, I just need a second. I can't do anymore.
Are you excited for the next Dark Pictures anthology game?
Yeah, I haven't played the first two yet, because I remember Joseph wasn't too hot on Man of Medan.
We got a review code of the second one that Joseph reviewed, like, way back.
Yeah, the second one looked good. I'm probably going to wait till they have a collection with all of them, and then I'll just, you know, grab that.
Maybe, yeah.
Just because I am interested in the second one and the upcoming one. So far, we're 2 for 3 in the ones I really want to play.
Yeah, the first one.
I don't think Man of Medan looks bad. It just doesn't look like the, you know, the best out of the concept.
It feels a bit janky.
I think a lot of us just wanted more Until Dawn, and we didn't get it.
Yeah.
And also, from what the reviews I read for Man of Medan, it's like they figured out how to do things really well in Until Dawn and then forgot, you know, for Man of Medan. Like, you know, just it felt like they didn't take the right stuff from Until Dawn.
The main issues were the characters. They just were so unlikable.
That's right. I remember when Joseph mentioned someone died. He was like, and I didn't give a shit. Fuck that guy.
But, yeah, exactly. But there was one person I liked, but then they ditched the whole game.
Until Dawn was one of my favorite PS4 experiences. Like, it was just, it was so good. I think that was one of the first games I played when I got a PS4. Too. Like, you know, I got my PS4 and Crash and Insane Trilogy came out, and I just kind of grabbed like 5 or 6 other games, you know, from my local shop. And I Until Dawn was already on my radar, so I it was like the first box I grabbed other than Uncharted Trilogy. Right. Yeah, so that's it for our quick news, and then we'll go ahead and jump into our news. It's gonna be a little bit of a lighter show. We forgot to mention, Joseph is still out.
Oh, God.
We were just kind of moving quick people. And just forgot to. Yeah, no, we love Joseph. We miss him. It's just, we're tired. We're very tired. Joseph is still working on getting moved into his new house. And, you know, he sold his house and bought a house, and he was dealing with all that stuff. And it was just a lot.
It sounds stressful, especially with E3. He was working on E3 as he was moving. That's how
right. Yeah, he said he
dedicated.
I remember he said
is.
He was packing boxes while covering
that's
E3,
insane.
And I was like, geez.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So go read all of Joseph's articles.
Yeah.
Click 5 times a piece in each article.
Follow him.
really flood him with views and thank him for his hard work. So yeah, Chris, ready to jump into our news?
Ready.
All right, so our first story, this is really interesting. My favorite thing about this is that it wasn't brought up during E3. I think it was smart for this to kind of come out as an afterthought later, because then they're not focusing on it too much, but I think it's still a pretty big deal. So this is over from The Verge, Tom Warren. Microsoft is bringing next-gen games to the Xbox One with xCloud. This is neat. Like, they're really, really going with their vision of play our games where you want to play them. And if you've got good, you know, internet, and you can sustain it, then there's going to be some Xbox Series XS games that you can play on your Xbox One through xCloud. That's really cool. We don't have a lot of information yet. Right now, all we know is the first game is going to be Microsoft Flight Simulator, which is really funny for me, because that, I know this sounds silly, because I don't talk about, you know, airplanes or having an interest in that stuff very often. It's like Forza Horizon for me. I don't know much about flying, just like, I don't know a lot about cars, but this just looks fun and exciting. This was the first game that made me want to go, okay, I gotta go get a Series X. And it's like, oh, never mind, I don't have to get one quite yet. I could just play it on xCloud. Obviously, still I'll try to get one when I can, but it's just kind of funny that, you know, this was the game, like, okay, I gotta have an X. Because this looks like a really fun game to play on the couch. Just sink into the couch and fly all over. Chris, I know you don't have an Xbox One, and you're gonna grab probably a Series X or S eventually if they have a compelling enough thing for you, or you'll just play on PC. But if you had an Xbox One and you were, you know, kind of thinking about upgrading, if all of Xbox's, and to clarify, Xbox didn't say all of their games are gonna have this happen to, I just wouldn't be surprised if Microsoft published games get this treatment. But if that were the case, would this kind of keep you from buying a Series X or S? If you could just play your Xbox published stuff on here?
No, because the problem is, like, I've had bad experience with PlayStation Now. Because I try to stream those PS3 games because for some reason PlayStation doesn't want to give me backwards compatibility. And I tried playing Ratchet and Clank into the Nexus the other day. And it was so laggy to the point of, like, being unplayable.
Oh.
So, yeah. And I've got great internet. So.
Right.
I think xCloud is probably better than that. I know Stadia's been better than PlayStation Now. But for me, I've really gone off the whole idea of streaming. I want the game playable on the hardware, you know?
Right. For me, I think this is a super cool option. But yeah, this would never replace traditional gaming for me. But it is kind of cool since, you know, I've had trouble tracking down a Series X. And it's like, okay, cool, I can play it like this for now. But yeah, I do agree. I don't think streaming is at a place where it could replace, you know, traditional gaming as a whole for most people. I don't think a lot of us really want it to replace either. I think really a lot of us really like having our box.
Well, everyone has a data cap as well in the States, right? So
true.
I don't think it's
going to I don't have one right now, but my provider keeps trying to get me to upgrade to faster speeds, and then I would lose my grandfathered unlimited data. And I'm like, I'm good. We got 200 by 20, and that's enough for two people.
But the thing is, you'll have to upgrade to that eventually, though.
Maybe. Right now, it's just me and my wife, so, like, if just Becca and I, our 200 down is, you know, good enough, but yeah, eventually I'll probably have to, but I really like having that free unlimited data, you know, like, it's just nice not to worry about it, especially since, you know, I update a game sometimes and it's like 80 fucking gigs.
Yeah.
Activision, please stop. Mm-hmm. Get your shit together. Mm-hmm. Stop making me download a 20 gig patch when you add a new weapon to Call of Duty. That is all. Thank you, Activision. And then we got one more quick story. Why it's news? Sorry, it's one of our news stories, but it's just a quicker one. It's this slower week after E3. So this is from Ben Reeves over at Game Informer. You guys are probably noticing that all of our stories are from Game Informer for the most part. That's my most used site, and I threw the run of show together quickly before we started recording. So Ben Reeves, Game Informer, Nintendo president comments on new Switch hardware. I'm going to read a little bit of this. Rumors have circulated for months and months that Nintendo is working on some kind of updated Switch hardware, a Nintendo Switch Pro, quote-unquote, that would feature a bigger screen, be capable of outputting in 4K resolution. But E3 has come and gone, and Nintendo didn't announce any such device. So, President of Nintendo America, Doug Bowser, addressed with the Switch Pro rumors in a recent interview with Dean Park, The Washington Post. Really good interview. I'd recommend everybody read it. I'll actually throw that in our recommended reading at the end of the doc, too, so whatever you're listening to, just scroll down to the end of our notes and there will be a link. He said, "We are always looking at technology and how technology can enhance gameplay experiences. It's not technology for technology's sake. It's how specifically can technology enhance a gameplay experience. And then where do you apply the technology? Do you want to apply it on current existing hardware platforms, or do you want to wait for the next platform? And then what's the right gameplay experience with that? There's a host of factors that goes into it. And that's something we're always looking at," end quote. So, we were expecting a mid-generation upgrade for the Switch. I think a lot of us, even like me and you, Chris, we love our Switch, but, like, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to making a more powerful version that comes out, you know, this year, next year. I don't know if I'd necessarily grab it right away, but I do think that we're approaching a time where that's going to be necessary. I don't think necessarily for Nintendo-published games, but we're starting to see the, you know, we're starting to see a little bit of age in the system.
Yep.
With ports and third-party games in general. To me, this reads like they're not doing a mid-generation upgrade, and that they're looking at doing a Switch 2, quote-unquote, whenever they get around to it.
Yeah,
For me, it seems like they're trying to drive this truck until it breaks, and then, you know, we got a new Switch. What do you think?
I keep hearing the Nintendo Switch Pro rumors, but I just don't believe them, personally. It just doesn't make sense to do it so quickly now that, you know, the PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, you know, they're... production is ramping up for them still, you know, they're still trying to get those out there. But Nintendo, like, I don't think they can get the parts they need to make this Switch Pro, you know? So I feel like if they're smart, I'd probably wait until next year, like holiday 2022. That's going to happen. They're going to have a bunch of first party titles available for it, like Splatoon 3, sorry. Probably a new Mario, and then they're golden, you know?
Do you think they make any of those exclusive to a new Switch, like Breath of the Wild 2 or Mario?
I think it would be positioned as a new, like a Switch 2, like you say. Yeah. I don't think it's going to be called New Nintendo Switch. I don't think, because like Nintendo typically has a console cycle of like every 5 years. They're shorter than Sony and Xbox most of the time. So
it's also weird though, because this is like a handheld and a console. You know, it's like they rode the DS for
I
would say a little too long, and you know the 3DS had a really long generation too. It's hard to say because Nintendo could conceivably, you know, use this system way past its expiration date with the right first-party games.
They could have different versions of the games, I guess. It's like the Wii U and the Switch with Zelda Breath of the Wild, right?
Well, and Guardians of the Galaxy is coming as a cloud game.
Yeah.
So they might try to... I think you mentioned in the last episode they might try to extend life a little bit, you know, that way with
third-party
stuff.
I think if they do have, you know, Switch 2... games being developed, they'd have it available through the cloud on the Nintendo Switch, just because of how popular it is, how many people have it. It's like that situation with the PS4, right? There's so many PS4s out there. Why would we just make it exclusive to the next system?
Right.
So I think if it was a mid-generation, I think if it was a mid-generation game, we would a game console, we would have heard it by now. I think they're going to go all in with the Switch 2. And, like...
I also don't think they're going to announce that early.
No.
Like, I think when they do announce that, they're going to do it a few months before it comes out. Because otherwise, people are going to stop
announce
buying
it
Switches.
As soon as this episode comes out.
Oh, yeah. That'd be really funny. That'd be our luck, too. Yeah. But, yeah, I just don't think they're going to announce this 6 to 9 months early. Because they don't want people to go, oh, I was going to get a Switch, now I won't.
Right.
They would... I know this sounds kind of, like, cold, but they'd rather you bought a Switch, and then the next day you find out there's a new Switch. Because you're going to buy that one, too. You know, a few months later. They don't want people to, on the fence, to not get one. So, I think they announce it in August.
It'd be such a baller move if they make, like, Mario Kart 9 on the next Switch.
Oh my god. If they did that, and, like, Zelda or Mario, everybody might complain, but they're gonna buy
That's the holy trifecta, right? Like, Splatoon 3, Zelda, and then a new Mario game.
Ooh, or
Mario Kart. Like, there's actually four. There's Mario Kart, a new 3D Mario, and then Zelda, then Splatoon.
And can you imagine if they did like a Smash Brothers Game of the Year edition type deal with, you know, all the DLCs bundled in, and you know, like there's a couple of extra. I could see them doing something with Smash too, because Smash really moves units too.
It does, yeah.
I remember when Smash came out on the Wii U, people were like, you know, fine, I'll buy a Wii U now. Like, they didn't want to, but a lot of people, Smash and Mario Kart were what made them, you know, get one. I think it would have happened more with Breath of the Wild too, if the Wii U was already, you know, pretty dead at that point.
Yeah.
On the Switch.
I feel like Smash, I don't know what you can do in the future for that. Because Ultimate's just
feels like that series is starting to wind down. Yeah. Because Sakurai, you know, is He's worked pretty hard on.
He has, yeah. And I think it's time we give he has a break.
This game I would like honestly, the game tight polish. They could just keep this version going forever.
Yeah, you know, that's what I think. Then just give it visual upgrades, like 4K resolution.
Yeah,
version. But I think it would be smart on Nintendo's part to have a new director on the series work on DLC for that game. Like once the Switch 2
keep the main game going and just kind of add new content and stages over the years. Yeah. That would be a good way to do it.
Poker Flights.
Yeah, so that's it for our news this week. A lot lighter because of E3, which you know are being over. And Chris, I think we're both okay with that. We're so tired.
Yeah.
Oh man. So we got a couple listener questions here. Usually we take a break, but I think this week we'll just keep going. We're you know kind of a trim episode. We got two questions. One of them, a friend of the show, Andrew McMahon. How do you think the next WarioWare will turn out, considering how Super Mario Party was pretty pared down when it came to creativity when compared to previous iterations? Do you think they'll do the same with this one to make it more accessible to casual players? I don't know what they're going to do. And the reason I say that is I think Game & Wario on the Wii U was, in my opinion, one of the best games on the Wii U. Like, top 10, top 5, like high up there for me. But it didn't sell very well. But it's hard to say. Is it because it's a more niche title and the Wii U sold, you know, terribly? You know what I mean? Like, I know it's a popular series. I just know it's not like a core series. So it's hard for me to say.
The problem with that series is that the content is so dry on that. Like, there's not much to it. It's like 5 to 10 seconds.
Oh, dude, I still play the Game Boy Advance one.
I know that, but...
they're so fun.
But is there enough value in that kind of series for it to be justified as a $50, $60 game, you know? Like, I would like it if that series goes to, like, $20, $30. But, you know, that's not Nintendo style.
I think that would help the series because people would be more likely to pick it up. But I personally would have no problem throwing $60 at a new WarioWare game, but I know that everyone's not going to do that. The Wii U one was $40,
yeah.
But that one wasn't quite like the WarioWare games before that. That one had, I'm trying to remember, 3 or 4 games, but they were kind of like more detailed. My favorite one was like a Pictionary one where one person was drawing in the gamepad, everyone's trying to guess. I had a lot of fun with my family on that one.
But what was the question? Sorry?
Oh, do we think that Nintendo is going to be really creative with this one and go all out, or do we think they're going to be more kind of, sorry, let me go back really quick. Do we think it's more pared down in terms of creativity and kind of scope, like that it was Super Mario Party?
I think it's one of those games you could easily turn out, like, during the pandemic, you know? I'm not sure how pared down it would be. It's hard to really tell from the trailer we've seen. But yeah. I think it would be the same length as a typical WarioWare game, I don't think.
I don't think they're that big because I did not like the where they cut back with Super Mario Party. I did not like, you know, I didn't like that they were kind of more conservative with their offering.
Yeah,
but you know, content. I think the Wii U Mario Party was better. I guess is what I'm saying.
I loved and that smooth was moves.
Frustrating. Yeah, smooth moves was really good. I also really like my one of my favorite games, the one on the Game Boy Advance, WarioWare micro games. I know this isn't really like super on topic. I just want to mention because it's related to our next question and this question a little bit. I do want to see a new Wario game soon too. I don't want to just get WarioWare. You know, I want Wario Land to come back. Those games are really silly and fun. Next question. A very, very good friend of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Very good friend of the show, Joseph Yates.
Never have.
Writing in. And his question is, it's simple, but it's one of the most important questions we've ever been asked. And it is, if a Wario, how much Wario would a Wario, if a Wario? Joseph, that is one of the best fucking questions I've ever
seen. It's too much Wario. It's too much Wario, Joseph. It's too much garlic.
Okay.
There's too many fonts.
Joseph, I'm going to answer this question the best I know how. The answer is Wario, first of all. And second of all, the true answer to this question is Wario needs to be in Fast and Furious 10. I want him and Vin Diesel and The Rock to drive together and fight. And that would be good.
On his bike? Yeah.
Oh my god, dude, his little bike. He's one of my favorite characters in Mario Kart too, because he's just freaking, wah! He's just ridiculous. Like,
yeah.
He's Wario's a lot. Chris, do you have an answer to if a Wario, 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 how much Wario could a Wario, Wario, if a Wario, Wario, Wario?
That's impressive.
My answer was Wario.
Just Wario. I don't know. Wario. Wario.
Okay. Our question, Joseph, is Wario. Joseph, thanks for writing in. I hope that you write in the future with more great, great questions like that. My night and life are forever changed. All right, so what we've been playing this week. Chris has been playing a fair amount of some stuff. Really, we've all been playing stuff for work. It's kind of funny. Yeah. Like, one of my games, I'm not really going to go. I'm just going to mention what I'm playing and then pass it to you. Because I don't have much to say other than I'm still playing Mass Effect 3 in Legendary Edition. I'm still enjoying it, obviously. Mass Effect. I was working on some guides and stuff for Prima games for that one. And then I'm still playing Fortnite.
How does it hold up?
I think it holds up really well. The only complaint I really have is, and I remember feeling like this when I played it for the first time at launch in 2012, but I just assumed, oh, maybe I'm just tired or playing quickly, because I mentioned this in the show before, but for Mass Effect 3, I took work off, and I played for 20 hours, I slept for 7 hours, I played for 20 hours or so, and then the game was finished. I did it in 2 sittings. And so, at the time, I thought, maybe I'm just tired, you know, maybe it's just me. But I'm feeling this now, too. I think they overcorrected the series. I think 2 had everything right in terms of menus, systems. I'll elaborate in a second. Quest systems and stuff like that. And I think that they would have kept the same, like, structure and framing for 3, but with 3's, you know, missions and, you know, put 3's content in 2's skeleton. And I think 3 would have been just as good as 2 or better. But 3 misses the mark a little bit for me. And 2 is still my favorite. And the reason being is there's less menus. And I think they were trying to make the game more accessible to non-RPG people. But, like, 2 had a perfect amount of menus where I didn't feel lost. But 3, first of all, the codex is lumped into the quest screen. There's not really, like, main quests and side secondary quests. I mean, there are, but they're all in the same quest column. And then on top of that, your text for a quest doesn't really update or change as you progress the quest. So let's say the quest is to get item A and take it to person B so you can help person C and get D. When you get A, it doesn't say, you've got A, go take it to person B so they can help C. Oh, you've given it to person B, now person C is good, and now D will happen. Quest complete. That doesn't happen as you progress the quest. So once you get the item, it still says, you know, you need to get this item and take it to person B. So it's easy to forget, did you pick this item up already? Do you already have that? Like, it's just really easy to kind of lose track, yeah, of your quest progress. And it makes me less likely to engage in side quests because, you know, I feel kind of, I don't feel grounded to this menu that some people might look at as a menu as like a jail, but it's, you know, it's not. These menus, like, guide you and help the game, you know, flow better. So, I don't know, Mass Effect 2 just, I took on side quests nonstop because I felt like I could keep track of what was happening. I was never wondering, did I go get that item? Just a couple of things were oversimplified too much for 3, you know, that I think hurt 3. Other than that, though, the story and everything is still, you know, great, and I love the combat. It's basically just Gears of War combat, which is, you know, great. Like, BioWare put their own twist on it because they got powers and stuff, but yeah, I think it's held up overall. I just, replaying this right after playing 2, you know, its issues were just really kind of, like, clear to me. Like, oh, wait, 2 did this and 3 doesn't. I wish it did. Which I might not have had as much of that if I didn't finish. But yeah, still fun, still held up. Just, I wish they wouldn't have kept changing stuff after, you know, balancing what they had with 1 when they made 2. They just kind of kept going. They should have.
Right.
Chris, you've been playing a bunch of games. I would like to hear about all of them, but especially Biomutant, because I've heard so much about that game.
Yeah, so this was a game that was lost in the shuffle. I don't think we covered it when we should have, but I'm going to be talking about it now. And there's a reason why I forgot about it, is because it kind of feels forgettable, personally. The combat doesn't feel great. The the way the story is portrayed is so frustrating, because when you're in cutscenes, the narrator just says everything, and like, it's like written as if English wasn't their first language at points. You know, it like there's some weird transitions, there's some weird kind of like phrases that the narrator says to explain the story and what
each character. I heard a lot of people say the game would have been better with the game was better when they turned the narrator off or down.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can only turn off the narrator during battles, I believe. So you still have to go through these annoying narrator segments of the cutscenes. So I just wish the characters just spoke English. They made things much better. But yeah, like,
wait, so is she like translating quite interesting what the characters are saying?
But, yeah, what's... they're just talking gibberish.
Oh, so and then the narrator's like, this person's saying this.
It just feels really slow and contrived, because the characters are just saying gibberish, and then he says what they say. So it just feels really slow.
Okay. Like, so instead of like Banjo-Kazooie noises and then like subtitles underneath, yeah, it's someone saying, oh, that creature said this,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, and it's, oh, it's, okay, it doesn't,
yeah,
feel,
that would get old really.
Yeah, it doesn't quick feel needed. Yeah, like subtitles or anything like that would have been much better. But yeah, like, my brain's a bit foggy on Biomutant. I just wanted to mention it because, you know, we got a review code from the publisher, and I thought we should cover it because, yeah, like, it has good bones to it.
Do you think it's still worth playing because of the positives? Or do you think the negatives really kind of unfortunately wash over a lot of the good?
The negatives kind of wash over it for me. Like, I don't think the combat's good enough. It's not... what's the word? It's not created to the best quality. You can tell it's a double A kind of game, and like, no, I like playing those kind of games, but this one felt a bit too janky to me. And then
yeah,
the environments
I saw some
cool
people saying it felt like an Xbox or PS2 game in terms of like structure and depth for gameplay.
Yeah, it just reminded me of Legend of K, to be honest.
Okay. Okay.
Hmm.
One more question I have on this for you. Mm-hmm. Do you think if they did a Biomutant 2, they could fix? Do you think there's enough good that they could salvage and, you know, run with in another game if they make corrections to your issues, or do you think they should just kind of cut their losses? You know,
it's an interesting.
Like, do you think
world
there's something here?
Yeah, it's got something there. It's got a unique kind of style. The characters look different as to what you'd expect from like other anthropomorphic games. It's a bit more edgy, a bit more gritty.
Right.
I think there's something there, like in this post-apocalyptic world where humans died off because of animals getting mutated and then them taking over the Earth.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the setting sounds cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool setting, cool lore, but yeah, just the execution just wasn't there for me. And when you have tons and tons of games releasing, like especially like other open world games like this, you just don't want to spend your time with this, just because it's just too many.
Yeah, issues. I've played some games like that where like, you know, this game's like I want to play this, but I'd rather play this than this because mm-hmm. this just does more. Yeah, I understand that. Tell me about Guilty Gear Strive. I've heard a lot of good stuff about this.
So this is the new fighting game from Arc System Works, who did Dragon Ball FighterZ,
DBZ?
Yeah, and they're known for like their anime fighting games. I'm really enjoying this one so far. I feel like it's much more approachable for newcomers, but there's also enough depth for old school fans of the game to get enough enjoyment out of. What I really love in this game is the online connection speeds, because most Japanese games have awful online, and that's like the bread and butter of fighting games, right? You need good online to enjoy the game.
Input lag or latency.
Yeah. And they switched to this new system called Rollback Netcode, which kind of like is a better system that predicts your movements, and it works. It's actually quite incredible how it works. And I've had a bit of lag here and there, but like it's surprisingly smooth. But getting to the game itself, every character feels unique, and they each have their own weapons. Like, one of my main characters that I'm playing is a character called Mei, who uses an anchor and can summon like dolphins and whales and sharks to help her with her special moves. And I think there's like a good mix of characters that can be suitable for beginners to easily input like combos and yeah, and that there are also some characters that are harder to learn that like the veterans can really sink their teeth into and get a lot of fun out of. For me as well, I feel like the matchmaking system that they have in the lobbies is actually well done. So I feel like I've been able to, like, how it works is there's this tower, and based on like your wins and losses, you go either down or further up the tower, right? And for me, I think that results in very fair games, very like equal kind of like, yeah, you can win. You can mostly win every game if you're clever, you know?
Right.
If you input your,
it looks like a really unique game.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I don't play a lot of fighting games except for the ones that really pull me in.
Yeah.
Usually it's just Mortal Kombat 11 or Mortal Kombat. Mm-hmm. But this looks really cool. I'm gonna add this to my wish list and, you know, pick it up the next time I'm looking for a fighting
and
game.
I would recommend it for beginners as well, because there's this mode called Mission Mode that takes you through each and every mechanic in a very helpful way. I wish at some points that the playback feature wasn't every single kind of like tutorial. But it isn't, so it doesn't give you like a video of like, okay, this is how you do this, right? But mostly, I've been able to get better at this game because of the mission mode, and I'm able to understand the different mechanics, and I feel like I've become a better player because of it.
That's good.
Yeah, I also want to give a shout.
No one wants to like read menu screens forever, so if the game finding a way to make it fun to learn is important.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to give a shout out as well. To the people at the Fighting Games Discord. So Mitchell Saltzman from IGN put out this tweet. It's like, hey, you know, does anyone reviewing this game want to join the Discord and talk and play some matches together? And yeah, that's been helpful because they've been able to teach me how to play the game more as well.
Cool.
Yeah, it was great.
That's cool.
So. Had a lot of fun with those guys, and they're awesome. So, yeah, Guilty Gear Strive, I would certainly recommend it. It has a beautiful anime art style that like, with 3D models that look like 2D anime, and it's, like, super detailed. The stages are elaborate and interesting, and the music, oh my god, I can't talk about Guilty Gear Strive without talking about the music, and I'm surprised Joseph Yeadon hasn't even heard of this game, because it has an incredible metal soundtrack. Like, the songs are so damn good. Like, I've been headbanging to them a few times, and it sounds fantastic. And the main theme song, Smell of the Game, is still on my constant rotation of songs to listen to. So,
nice.
Just, yeah, we received a review code from Arc System Works. I don't know if I said that, but thank you so much for sending the code, and I will continue to talk about this game for a while.
Thanks. I'm going to check that out, too. Mm-hmm. It looks really good. I was looking at the images on Google when you were talking about it. It looks really cool. And then last, you got Ninja Gaiden Sigma, which you also received a review code for as well. Talk to me about this.
Yeah, so I'm reviewing this for Game Skinny, so you can read my full review there, but... I was playing the Ninja Gaiden Master Collection and decided to focus mainly on the first game, Ninja Gaiden Sigma. I have mixed feelings about this. So underneath, I think there's a brilliant game. The stealth, there's no stealth in it, but there's like the action kind of gameplay is similar to like Devil May Cry, where like there's really cool combos that look fun and exciting to implement, and there's challenge there. There's a really good mount challenge where bosses have unique kind of setups that you have to counter, and the enemies, like, they're smart. You know, it's not like Assassin's Creed where only one attacks you at the same time, at one time, like they all attack you at the same time, you know. Yeah. And for me, this game feels kind of like Resident Evil as well, where you're exploring the levels, you go into secret areas with your techniques, like being able to wall jump from place to place to place, you know? And it feels rewarding finding all the collectibles, like the Golden Scarabs, that gives you like a really cool blade if you collect them all. As you go through the game, you're rewarded for your diligence of finding like each treasure around each level, right? And then, yeah, the story is kind of non-existent, really. Like, it doesn't... I might be wrong about the series, but it feels like the gameplay is the heavy focus of this one.
Yeah, I think you're right from what I've played of the series.
Yeah, so...
It's like Doom, where it's got a story, but that's not the point.
But it's not really... It's kind of ahead of its time, in a way, because it feels like a blockbuster adventure. So... For me, if you like Devil May Cry or Resident Evil, I think you'd really enjoy this. And like, I'd recommend giving it a shot. But some issues did pop up for me, and that's why I rated it a bit lower.
How do you think it holds up as a 2004 game, which is basically what it is? It's a remastered remaster.
But... Yeah, it's a remaster of a remaster, pretty much, because I think Ninja Gaiden Sigma was based on the PS2 game. I might be wrong. And then it got put to the PS3. And then, now playing it on the Switch, which I played it on, you can tell its age. Like, it looks like kind of blurry at points. The textures aren't that detailed. And it's not something I'd expect from a HD kind of remaster. It's salvageable. It's fine, you know, for what it is, and you get used to like the low texture quality just because the great game that's underneath it. But yeah. I wish it's improved some things. Like, the platforming was terrible. It's like you know, with 3D platformers, where they're pretty easy to control now, but like Super Mario 64 was tough. It's kind of like that with Ninja Gaiden, where 3D platforming in action games was just being experimented on at that point. And
right,
we were still
kind of figuring out what it meant to have
and it feels 3D janky for me. There's some platform heavy segments that were tough to get through just because of the bad camera, and then like how awkward the jumping felt, because like it's like with the press of the button, he instantly like rolls in the air, right? So it's hard to really figure out okay when to jump and how to jump, and then you also have to manage like the wall running, right, where you have to jump into the wall at a particular angle, so that sprung up a few frustrating moments in the game. But overall, I did enjoy my time with it. I do wish they fixed a few things here and there, like the CG cutscenes that look disgusting. Like, they look stretched.
They're probably pre-rendered.
A pre-rendered CG. But like, for me, you could probably do AI upscaling. And then have them presented like the Kingdom Hearts games, where the CG cutscenes have actually been really well preserved and look great in HD.
Yeah, it's probably just an issue of money. It's like they want to give it the Mass Effect Legendary Edition treatment budget, or just, you know, clean it up a little bit and get it out the door, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just needed those improvements, I think. But,
yeah, and you're right. It was an Xbox game, but PS2 generation. It was an Xbox game, and they did a PS3 remaster of it, and then this is like a remaster of that. So
yeah,
it's 17 years old, and it's showing its age a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's neat that there's still some fun stuff
it holds up in some ways. And I do like the different weapons you can collect in the game that you can actually miss if you don't explore the whole level properly.
But you've got some guides, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'll have a guide up for that particular topic. Yeah, so...
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. We'll have to plug that when that happens and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's it this week for what we've been playing and news and stuff. Just a little bit of a shorter week, which is always nice after a busy E3. Chris, when you are not reporting ActiveQuest, where can people find you?
You can find me at PenwellWrites on Twitter. You can read my written work on GamePer, GameSkinny, VirtualAware. I'll probably post it on Twitter whenever I have something big come up. And then you can listen to Go Beyond My Hero Academia podcast each and every Wednesday. Vaughn Hyde and I, we go through every episode of the show in excruciating detail as we compare the anime to the manga, and it's a lot of fun. I don't like where it's heading with the manga, personally. There's a lot of foreboding going on with a character I think shouldn't have that, but I still love the show, and you should listen to the podcast if you like it.
Cool. And then you can find me at Twitter at It's Strictish, RetroWare Games, GamePro. I'm working on some cool stuff for Prima. I'm looking forward to sharing out. And as always, thanks again for listening. Thanks for rating. Thanks for telling your friends, your dog, and nailing a piece of paper to a tree that says ActiveQuest. We appreciate it. And we are looking forward to seeing you guys next week with hopefully a full roster and a moved, not just physically, but also emotionally moved Joseph Yaden. Mm. Thanks. That's our show.
Yeah, and we should release some more like evergreen stuff, I think, as well. Like our favorite Resident Evil games and, you know, stuff. Maybe our favorite Sonic games at some point as well over the next few weeks as the news kind of cools down. So we'll see you next week. Bye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.